Hi, everybody, and welcome to Stories from the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. My name is Ray Serebrin, and I am the host of the Midlife Crisis Dance Party radio program on KPTZ in Port Townsend. The following is one of our story time segments that we present each week. I hope you enjoy it.
Ah, you're just in time for a story.
When the sky is dark and the moon aglow and the morning star burning from afar enters into you, all that I can say, all that I can know is that I'll be dreaming pieces of you.
Yes, my friends, it's time for story time and the Midlife Crisis Dance Party, a weekly feature. And this week we offer you part one, my friends, of I Was a Teenage Hippie and an Innocent Young Man, Innocent and Ignorant of the Ways of the World. We'd start today's story with a quote from the author Chuck Palahniuk, who wisely said, "Our real discoveries come from chaos and come from going to the place that looks wrong and stupid and foolish." Last night, I saw a movie about a guy who decided to become a lobster, and it made me think back on when I decided to become a hippie. I know lots of people used to be hippies, especially around here, so it's not such a big deal. But for some reason, my thoughts drifted back to those times in the mid to late 1960s and to the decisions I have made and to the roads I have not taken and to the bridges that I have crossed so recklessly and to the traffic circles I have so impetuously squared off. Anyway, as I see it, I was a hippie mostly because of Adolf Hitler. He started a war that my dad was in, and then he met my mom in England during that war, and after the war they got married and had babies, just like millions of returning soldiers and their wives, who likely had years of pent-up sexual frustration. And those babies became people like me, the baby boomers. Now, I know it's shocking to think that many of the people you see around you were created in a post-war sexual frenzy, since most folks don't look like they are the product of anything so intimate. But it is true. And as an aside, it is an important reminder that even your mother and your father were once lustful, lascivious, lovesick fools just like you. Then again, if imagining your parents copulating is too much for you, just pretend in your mind that you were adopted or that you're a test tube baby, and that will probably make the bad images go away. But I digress. Anyway, we baby boomers, who were the first few generations born after the Great Depression, grew up in relative affluence and safety compared to our parents and grandparents. And I think that made us feel just a little bit too good. Life was too easy, so we decided to rebel. At first, we rebelled against bad television and fabric softener commercials and against mushy, soft white bread with no nutritive value. But soon we began rebelling against war and materialism and against good haircut and nice clothes and that kind of stuff. We also wanted better drugs than Thorazine and Vicks VapoRub, so we started taking LSD and peyote and marijuana. We also wanted to have more sex. And thanks to birth control, we invented a concept called free love, which meant Bill had sex with John, and John had sex with Cindy, and Cindy had sex with Jerry, and Jerry had sex with Bill, and then you called the free clinic, and you ordered a gallon of penicillin, and then you started again. All of those things, the drugs, the free love, the rebellion, became a movement. a counterculture, if you will. We know that because it was on TV and in the magazines, and because if you went to the right places, you saw a bunch of hippies with long hair and strange costumes lying around, stoned out of their minds. Music helped spread the movement, fusing together all the elements of the counterculture into a bunch of crazy songs, spread by access to state-of-the-art high-technology devices, such as audio tapes and 8-track car stereos, and the most sinister of all the new technologies, FM radio broadcasting. Those transformative songs are the songs we now hear on car commercials, but at one time they had great meaning, inspiring people to steal flowers to put in their hair and to have arguments with their parents. My path to hippiedom was circuitous. It began, for the most part, in the early 1960s when I was in high school. I became intrigued by the folk music craze that was going on in the U.S., and I started to hang out on weekends at the new coffee houses that were springing up in Seattle. They featured scented candles and live folk music and enigmatic poetry. They were in the University District in Seattle, and downtown there was a place called The Door. And I could go to those places and I could feel very grown up because there was no age limit, and I could drink coffee and I could feel like I was somehow part of a cool and groovy scene. Now that led me to think I was better and hipper than my peers and provided me with a sense that I was involved in some sort of secret society of nature boy, bohemian picnic kind of guys, even though I was nothing of the sort. I was actually an insecure, social-climbing high school kid who secretly wanted to be Hugh Hefner. But I grew older, and the drugs changed all that. LSD and marijuana served as a mental detergent, washing away years of social programming. They expanded my consciousness and pushed me up the evolutionary ladder until I was able to reach the peak of human development. Becoming an unwashed guy who had stringy long hair and leather pants and who didn't wear underpants and who spouted profound statements such as, "Right on, man," and "Whatever, man," and "Everything is everything, man." For some reason, the very evolved people of that era needed to say "man" at the end of every sentence, even if they were talking to women or to dogs wearing bandanas. My folks were not happy with this turn of events, especially when I read them long passages of Bob Dylan's song, "It's All Right, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding," and when I told them that Abby Hoffman said we should kill our parents. Somehow, none of that went over very well. At the time, I didn't think they got the metaphor, but in reality, they understood it all too well. Furthermore, what they didn't realize, especially my mother, was that she was complicit in my adoption of this new way of being. And that, all of the horror and revulsion she felt as she beheld the hairy, drug-addled spectacle that I was, could be laid at her door. It could be all laid at my mother's door. Next week, I'm going to tell you how my mother sowed the seeds of all of this, and how she programmed me to be a hippie first class, with part two of the story, "I Was a Teenaged Hippie." I'm Ray Serebrin, and that was Stories from the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. We invite you to tune in every Thursday at 3 p.m. for more frivolity, absurdity, and melody. Thanks so much for listening.